This is the Live Your Edge podcast, episode 25. This is Gilbert. Welcome to the podcast. Today, we have RJ Mack with us on the show. RJ is only 24 years old, and yet he has been able to generate passive income without fail for the last 2 years. Doing online business, particularly Amazon merch. Within 3 months, he was able to go from zero to revenue of over $7,000 in his pocket. At one point, he was able to do over $10,000 just selling t-shirts. This is a very fun-filled episode talking about his life before starting his companies, some of the previous projects that he has worked on. Why did he decide to go from corporate to coconuts? What are some of the ways that we can also do that as well? And some of his travel tips and his philosophy on why traveling will reveal the rawest and purest and most genuine forms of self. Join me in welcoming RJ Mack. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today, I have RJ Mack with us. Welcome to the show, RJ.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So today, we're going to talk about a little bit about RJ's journey from starting his previous ventures to now doing Amazon merchandise and making around six figures annually and not a lot of time involvement, and also a bit about his journey, traveling the world, visiting at least a dozen countries. Just 2018, and how we can all do the same. So let's get started. RJ, tell us a little bit about your story. How did it all start for you?
I just wanted to clarify, I'm not actually making six figures currently, but I have reached the 10K mark for a month. At that point, I was just kind of like going for the six figures, but then you reach a point where it's just like, there's no real point to go further. I mean, there is, but I'm just pretty happy with how I am right now. So I can get back to the six-figure mark, but...
So it's more of the lifestyle.
Yeah. Like, I'm in a resort in Cancun right now and not really worrying too much about anything. So, like, there's no point of, like, me chasing more money. So.
What time do you wake up? You woke up really late today, right?
Depends. Like, no, it's like, sometimes I'll wake up at, like... Yeah, I mean, sometimes I'll wake up pretty early, but just depends on, you know, what I have to do. If, like, it's a busy week, then I'll wake up pretty early and get things cranking. But I'm not really one to sleep in. I never really understood that concept whenever I was growing up, because people were saying like, oh, it's the weekend, I'll sleep in till like 2 p.m. And I'm like, my body clock just doesn't allow me to sleep in that late. But yeah, so I'm a pretty early riser.
Not a fan of sleeping in. Not a fan of it.
I mean, I'm a fan of it. It just doesn't work with my body schedule. So
what happened? You got up today. You went for a swim.
Yeah. So I got up today, went for a swim. I bought a snorkel yesterday, so got to use that for the first time. And yeah, just went out to the ocean. It's about a 5-minute walk, and then just dove on in. It was nice.
How long have you been living like this? Have this sort of lifestyle where you're traveling around and just working off your laptop?
Yeah. So I've been a digital nomad, it's kind of what they call it, for about 2 years now. And how it all got started, I was working as an insurance broker for a pretty big company. And basically, I was working around 80 hours a week, including weekends. And my mindset's just like, I need to do the best I can possibly do and make sure that I'm going to succeed. And it wasn't a requirement to work 80 hours, but a lot of people in the office were doing it. And you're not going to meet your sales if you're not going to put in the time. So I was going between mortgage people and like real estate people and banks. And then in the office, I was cranking out insurance policies and talking to the customers. And when I was driving around, I was falling asleep just because I was working so much. I'd get up at like 5, go to bed at 10:30 or so. Like the third time I fell asleep, I just said, you know what? I don't think this is worth it to risk my life working for somebody else. And they're making way more money than I am based off of my time. So that's when I looked for the opposite of that. And that's how I found the digital nomad community. And so I was like, wow, there's people working online and they're doing all these incredible things and they just make money and they travel. I can do that. And like, no one's that special. And so I went out and pursued it. So set a deadline of when I'm going to leave my job. And then I left and went over to Thailand for the Nomad Summit, the Las Vegas one.
So if you guys don't know, RJ and I met at Nomad Summit in Vegas back in August.
Yeah.
In August.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
So it's usually in Thailand, but this was the first time it was on Las Vegas. So that's where we met. But the one I went to in Thailand, I was like brand new, kind of like how everyone does it. They like look online, like, how do you become a digital nomad, or like go to all the forums and stuff. And I was like, okay, so this is the place. So I'm going to go to Thailand. I'm going to go learn as much as I can. And then I'm going to go apply myself and then try to achieve this lifestyle. I talked to a whole bunch of people in Thailand and everyone there is very friendly. They're just basically there to share and try to sustain this life for everybody else. So you'll have a workshop like every single day where someone will come in and like, hey, this is my business model. Let me know what questions you have and I'll teach you basically everything. And so I just got exposed to people that have traveled, you know, for years and years and just made a ton of money online. What they were doing was nothing special. Like they just have their passive income or like their active income and someone working for them. And then like a simple process here and there, but, then they just go off and do whatever they want and they go explore. Like a lot of them, whenever it gets to the smoky season in Thailand, they'll just be like, all right, let's go to Bali now. And then everyone just jumps ship. And I'm like, wow, that's crazy. Like back in the office, you know, everyone's like, let me just plan, you know, 6 months out of the year in order to get there. And then let me make this much amount of money. And then, okay, now I got to talk to my friends to see if they can come and like all that, all the planning. But these guys were just like, all right, let's go. And so I was like, that's where I want to be. And it took me a while to get my feet started. And I partnered with some other people for an app agency and we had a good run. And I ended up leaving that partnership because I found myself in the same position where I was still working 80 hours a week, chasing down businesses and still in Dallas. So I was like, I am not a nomad at this point. Like this is not what I went to leave my job for. So I had to find another plan. So I ended up going, taking different courses, taking Shopify courses, doing affiliate marketing, doing drop shipping, all of that. And as I was taking a Shopify course, I got an email and it said, hey, you've been accepted to merch by Amazon. And I was like, cool, what's this? I think this is a scam. Because I was like, wait, Amazon, what? So I looked into it and I looked up some YouTube videos and Googled, like, what's merch by Amazon? And I realized like, okay, this is a legit thing. So let me see what's this merch by Amazon email. And it said I got accepted. And I think what happened was I was on the Digital Nomad subreddit and someone posted to apply. And then I applied. And then 6 to 8 months later or something like that, that's when I got the email. So what merch by Amazon is basically a print on demand service fulfilled by Amazon. So when a customer orders your product that you upload, so you upload just the artwork, the graphic file, the customer clicks on that link and then they click on the buy button and that triggers a set of things for Amazon. So Amazon goes to your file and then they put that on the printing queue. And so they print one t-shirt in that same size, color, and your graphic design on there. And they ship it to the customer, collect the payment, and then give you the money. So all you have to do is basically upload the artwork, have your keywords, set the price, and then you're in business. So I was like, wow, that's amazing. Because I had a t-shirt business in college. I had a screen, not screen printing, it was a heat press. So a heat press is basically a giant oven, like a clamshell heat press. And goes up to like 400 degrees or so. And you put some artwork on top of a t-shirt and then you press it down and then it makes a t-shirt for you. So I had that in my trunk of my car and brought it into the dorm room to print t-shirts. And then it'd heat up to like 500 degrees and I'd try not to burn myself. I was like, yeah, this isn't sustainable. I don't think I like this anymore. So I ended up selling that for for textbook money in college. But yeah, so having just Amazon do all of the fulfillment, the shipping and like all the customer service, it's incredible. And all I see is what size they bought, what color they bought, if it's male or female, what design, and then how much money I get paid. So it's pretty hands-off and you don't have to deal with a lot of customers. When people get into business, they all like to claim like, be your own boss. You know, you see it everywhere and like have that hashtag, I'm my own boss and all that. And it's like, well, when you become an entrepreneur and when you get into business, you really aren't your own boss. It's everyone else in the entire world is now your own boss. Because if you have those customers, if you're talking to a billion people a day, those people own you basically, and they're the ones providing you with money. So they are your boss now. And so you don't really have that with Merch by Amazon, which is amazing because the less people you have to talk to, the better you are with freedom of travel and freedom of time. So that's the kind of business model that I really needed to get into. When I was with the apps, it was like I had so many, you know, inquiries and like people that had problems and like new referrals and all those things to juggle. With Merch, it was just like me uploading a thing, talking to Amazon, talking to my designers, and then that's it. Don't have to deal with any, you know, problems that you have with a day-to-day business. So I did that for a solid 2 months. I put in about 30 hours a week just doing Merch by Amazon, research, A/B testing, what works, what doesn't work. And I always looked at it as a big business. So a lot of people that come in and they're like, I have so many artwork designs I can do. And like, I'm going to learn Photoshop. I'm going to learn Illustrator. I'm going to learn all these different things. And I said, it's physically impossible. If I want to have more than 1,000 designs up on Amazon, I can't do all this artwork on my own. And there's no point of paying, you know, $40 a month or whatever for Photoshop, because it's like, I know I'm not a good designer. I know there's way better people out there. So I hired a team immediately and I had my designers do things for like $10, $15 a pop. And I said, you know, if I sell three shirts, this already pays for the design. I had no problem spending, you know, money to put it down, because it's like when you're in the t-shirt business, you have to buy 500 t-shirts at one time, you know, at a wholesale price, and then have that stored. And then what if somebody doesn't like your design, or like what if somebody, if it just doesn't work, or like what if you just print a whole bunch of t-shirts and all of a sudden product's ruined by like some kind of ink that messed up, or anything can go wrong really. But with this, it was just like, I have no problem doing a $15 investment and hopefully it will grow. Pretty small compared to like the drop shipping containers where you have to ship from China, wait a month, and you don't even know if the product's going to be good. A lot of safety in this platform. And yeah, that's why I just went all in for it. And I knew like Amazon's the place to be because everyone's shopping on Amazon right now. After, you know, 1 month, I got 50, something like that, $50 in profit. And my first shirt, that was like the first online income I ever made. I made like $1 and I was like, oh shit. Like I was like, oh man, this is money online. We made it. And I was like basically melting in my chair. I was like, oh man, I can't believe I just made money off of that dumb shirt. Like it's just a text design.
So this is very interesting. So that was definitely one of those, you know, eye-opening moments for you. How did that differ from when you first made your first dollar to when you made your first $1,000 and to when you made $10,000?
Yeah,
How did the feeling differ?
How was the feel go? So my favorite moment with Merch is actually that first purchase, because that's when it opens your eyes, when it's like, wow, this is a real thing. Like people are actually buying my product that I just made like in 30 seconds. And I made this money online. I have no idea who bought it, but the money's there. And so that feeling just sunk in. I was like, okay, we're about to go in, you know? And so that was the moment where it was just like 3 days after I posted my first design. That's when I was like, oh, I got to go in like full time now, because it's like, it's quick, you know, that's a quick turnaround, 3 days. Like some people just put up Shopify stores and like wait months for that first sale. And so it was a really big eye opener. And compared to like my first $1,000 on Merch, is like, that was nothing. I mean, that was like, it was just expected at that point, because it's like, if you put in the work, you know, you're going to get that money back. So yeah, that first sale was huge.
So for a lot of people that haven't gone into, you know, online businesses and they're thinking of starting, do you recommend that they do it on the side first while still running their full-time gig? Or do you think that, or do you feel in your experience that you should really just go full-time and go all in if you decide to do something?
Yeah. So I've talked to a lot of people about this and it really depends per person. So I am in a very fortunate situation where I don't have any debt. I moved in with my parents and, you know, they provide housing and food and laundry and, you know, again, I might have my dogs there. So I don't have any of those expenses of, you know, rent or paying off a car or any of that. So I was in a really good position. I basically only had just a couple thousand dollars, and I knew this would last me a long time because I was living pretty frugally and didn't, you know, go out and didn't really spend a lot of money and didn't have any recurring payments or anything. I didn't even have Netflix at the time. So everything that was coming in was just pure, like, pure money that I could use however I wanted it to be. And if you have all that debt, if you have like a bill to pay, if you have all these things that still are relying on your income, then absolutely, like, stay with your job. You need something secure. Even though, like, I know that if you put in the work with merch, it'll pay off if you do it correctly, you still need some kind of safety net to hold you up. As long as there's something there that's like, you're not going to starve, then you're going to be fine. Like, that's why a lot of people move to Thailand, because you can ball on a budget over there. Like, it's hard to spend more than $1,000 a month on every expense, including like if you go out and like party every day. So that people go to Thailand so they can bootstrap, and you just have to look at your expenses. So that's, I recommend, like, you really need to look at your lifestyle and how you pay for things and everything. But if you want to go in to business, then you got to have a long runway and make sure that you're going to be okay. But that's kind of the make or break point. It's jumping out of the airplane and knowing that the parachute's going to open up. I mean, that's how long the runway you need to set up. Like, I knew I was going to be good for at least a year, and like, I knew my parents weren't going to kick me out on the street. Like, of course, every day they'd be bothering me, be like, "Hey, get a real job. Like, I don't believe in you." Blah blah blah. Like, I was getting all of that, but I, like, at least I knew, like, "Hey, I'm not going to be cold on the street at night." Like, my parents still got my back in that aspect. So that's how you know, like, I think I can spend maybe 12 months on a business, actually go for it. And then that will be my runway. And I was only 22 at the time. So I, you know, make mistakes while you're in your early 20s. If you're like, if you're older, like maybe like 65 plus, it's like, there's not a lot of time to like build that business up, and you got a lot of people relying on you. So I was just in a really fortunate situation and just made it work because I knew I had the opportunity.
How old are you now?
I am 24.
24.
Yeah. So 24 and 2 more years, then I get kicked off that health insurance plan. So, that's what I have to.
but you're making bank.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, no expenses, man.
Bank.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I think.
Right.
I think that one of the things that people don't talk about a lot is to tap into their support networks. And I used to be really afraid of asking for help, particularly from family and parents, because you're all also always in that position where, oh, what if other people would judge me, or other people would, wow, he's living with his parents and all of that stuff. But sometimes it does happen. And I can completely understand, like, there's some people that don't have those expense overhead, but they still haven't decided to make the jump, and they're young. Let's say they're young. They don't have any overhead. They don't have any expenses. They can just jump, but it's not anything that's like physical or situational or like circumstance that's holding them back. It's really that their mind is telling them that, oh no, what if this doesn't work, right? People are going to judge me. I think this is like one of the hardest hurdle for people that are trying to become location independent, become a digital nomad, or make money online and, you know, sort of live life on their own terms, right? I mean, whatever that means, right, for them. But in my take is, or maybe your take would be somewhat different or similar. My take is, if it doesn't work out, let's say a year later, you got a runway for 12 months, a year later, everything goes to shit. Like, nothing works out the way you want it to go, and you come home broke and nothing to show for it. Like, I think you can still go and get yourself a job. You can still go back.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah, and you can still go back and make up for so-called time that you lost, which I don't think is actually a loss, because you're essentially learning from your experience, right? And you put yourself out there. So I think at least people should give themselves a pat on the back for trying. How would you see this if somebody tries, you know, they burn all their runway and they have to go back, you know, they have to start from zero again. They have to move back in with their parents if they can. If not, then they have to, you know, give up and get a real job. What is your take on that?
Yeah. So it's not actually a loss during that time. I know plenty of people that I met during the Chiang Mai summit, and they didn't make it. Like, they're still working day jobs and stuff, but there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, like, that's the lifestyle they want to live now. And like, they just tried too much, or like they didn't try enough, but it really does take a while in order to find something that works. And the reason why a lot of people fail is because they don't have the mindset to succeed. If you put in, you know, 100% of your effort for those 12 months and nothing happens, like, you did something wrong. You know, you didn't try hard enough. You got to be basically like waking up, trying to find a good business model, going to sleep, not thinking about anything else except for making, you know, making this dream come true. And if you're not in that right mindset, then it's not going to work for you. And then after you get to a point where you're comfortable, then you can ease off. Then you can finally start doing like more things that are extracurricular. But for those 12 months, if you're not really grinding the gears and making yourself, you know, follow your dreams, then what are you really doing, you know? So that's why people fail. But if you find a business model that doesn't work and you just have, you know, this really bad feeling about it, then switch, you know? It took me like 5 different business models to find something that works for me. And, you know, some people can be making, you know, 10K a month and you try it and then you just feel that it's like, I can't do this for the rest of my life. Don't do it. You know, you'll find another business model and then that might be something that's better. And you'll take a little bit of that and apply it to your own thing. And then you'll find something that works for you. That's the way to go about it. You can't just, you know, follow one course and then say like, all right, this is going to work. And then just keep trying. And maybe you're doing something wrong, or like, maybe like, it's just not meant to be for you, but you got to adapt. You know, the market's always changing. So I know that merch is really hot right now, but you know, in maybe 10 years, there's probably something new that's going to take over. Maybe like merch by Alibaba. So we'll see.
So in your perspective, that people should try as many business models as they possibly can and to find something that works, right? Because most of the time it's not going to work the first time around. And do you think that some people just give up right before they hit the goal? Like just right before?
Yes and no. It depends. Like some people really need to analyze what the business model is about. So let's take dropshipping, for example. A lot of advertisements are saying like, you know, I just made $10,000 by dropshipping and I didn't do anything, blah, blah, blah. But the thing is that those people know how to find an audience, and that's their customers. And they spent money to, you know, find that audience, or like put in a lot of work to build up that audience. And what they're teaching is that here's the business model. Drop shipping is you go to X place, upsell it for 40%, and then sell it at Y place. And yeah, you know, that's basic business right there. And people are like, wow, I don't need to spend anything. But you do. You need to find your customers. And if you build a website trying to drop ship, they don't realize until they've outsourced, you know, the products and outsourced all of that, this. But then when they're looking and open up shop, nothing happens. And so people don't analyze that portion of the business. They just see how much potential they can get. If I sell X amount of product, I'm going to make this amount. But they don't realize that to find those followers and that audience and spend that money on ads and everything. So you do need to drop a lot of money for drop shipping, even though people say it's like a free business basically. And if you don't realize that, then you're going to be spinning your wheels a lot in order to get to that point where you say, okay, where the heck is my audience now? And so if you don't analyze that business model enough, then you're going to spend a lot of your runway trying to get onto that. And so you can tell too. It's like I did, you know, just a little bit of each business model and really just thought about it. I'm like, can I do this for 10 hours a day and like still, you know, be sane about things? And a lot of the models, you know, it's like, no, I can't. And it's like, this isn't a freedom business and this isn't like meant for me until, you know, I found what really works. And for me, it's like merch sometimes is like that, but I knew that it was just the right amount of work for me and like the model that I aligned with. Once I realized like, hey, I made $1 and then I made more money and then I made like up to that 10K figure a month as a digital nomad. And like most of that was due to merch. I was like, okay, like doesn't really matter what business model you choose. It just matters if it allows you whatever you want to do. So, I mean, there's no perfect business model for people. Like people always are going to be like, ah, there's a shinier side of the coin. And you just got to find what works for your lifestyle at that moment.
Speaking of lifestyle, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about maybe let's talk a bit about lifestyle design. Because there are some people that make pretty good money. You know, they're banking, they're saving a lot of money, but they haven't really been able to afford themselves the lifestyle that they sort of envisioned. Let's say they are working 80 hours a week. They're making a lot of money, but they don't have time to spend it. They don't have time to enjoy the fruits of their labor. So what is some of the things in reduction, like elimination or, you know, delegation that people can do to free up some time that they can use to go swimming, hit the gym, right? Get into shape, do stuff that they enjoy, genuinely enjoy doing, instead of like laboring away at something that doesn't really serve them and their audience or so forth.
Right. So there's a lot of big examples of like people making a lot of money, but they're tied to their work. While I was traveling, I met, you know, a couple of doctors and lawyers. They're tied to their clients, like they're tied to the office and they're tied to all that, but they're making so much money. I've got personal friends that are in banking and, you know, they're making, God, like some are making 80K a month, you know? So a lot of people making a ton of money, but you know, at what expense? Like, they can't spend it on anything because like they'll just spend it on, you know, nice cars, big apartment, and like go out and, you know, party and stuff. And it's like, if that's the life they want to live, then go for it. But like, they look at my lifestyle and they're like, man, like I wish I could just like buy a one-way ticket to Mexico like you, you know? I'm like, well, it's a trade-off, you know? So it's really where your priorities lie.
I mean, they could,
but yeah. Like they're still tied to either their job or like that status or like trying to compete with all of their peers and stuff. And if that's the lifestyle you want, then like go for it. But for me, when I was making, you know, just enough to go around and like travel and stuff, then I realized like that's really what I want. Like I don't really care for, you know, a nice house, a nice car, because I can just, you know, rent one or like go to a nice Airbnb or anything like that. It just doesn't really matter. It's all just material things. And when you backpack for a long time, like all you have is everything going to carry on. So you don't really care for, you know, big items and like a lot of clothes or any of that stuff. And that's the lifestyle I want. I mean, like my life, it seems awesome for me, but like some people look at that and they're like, oh, that sounds terrible. But I mean, I think it's great. So this is what I wanted. Like this was a big point. When I was working as a broker, there was somebody in the office and he had to cancel a Disney vacation in order to make sales. And I was like, wow, like your family didn't go on vacation because like you were in the office, like, and everyone was in the office was like, yeah, make that money, bro. And I'm like, I don't know, dude. I choose Disney World, you know. And so I was just like, yeah, I can't see myself being, you know, older, having kids, and like doing all these like things in the office all the time, and then not being able to be a good parent or like be, you know, to my full potential. It's like, sure, you can make a ton of money, and like people were making a ton of money, but it's like, at what cost? If you go on vacation, someone can sweep in and steal all of your clients, and people are calling in and asking for you, then you're not going to be making those connections, and people are going to be like, oh, he's on vacation, what the heck? Especially in insurance, because if people are coming at you in a time of need, then they're going to really rely on you, and that puts a really bad image on yourself if you're out, you're not in the office. So I said, that's not the lifestyle I want. I'm just going to go and kind of be whatever I want to do and like do whatever I want. So that's what I crafted, you know. I'd rather show everybody my experiences than my nice flashy things.
I think this is sort of, it's different for everyone. Some people, you know, like it. And for a big part of my life, I like those material things at one point, until you get to the point, like you mentioned, having to just pack one backpack and going somewhere. It's sort of like a reminder that you don't take any of this with you. You don't, when we die, we're not going to take any of our possessions with us. But what we do accumulate in this time is the memories of and experiences that we had, and we can pass these on to others and to our future generations. My question would be, if someone listening to this is keen on, whether it's they're quitting their job or, you know, they're just starting off and maybe they've had some, they're a little discouraged, What kind of advice would you give to them to either make that first step or to keep going in these rough times? Because we all have that. I mean, I had that, I have that, and you have that, and a lot of the people that we know in this space have that. What are some nuggets that you would share with us today?
Right. So that's a good question. When people feel discouraged, the number one thing is that everything in life is going to be on yourself. This is going to be a little harsh, but no one cares about you. Your girlfriend doesn't care about you. Your parents don't care about you. Your brother, sister don't care about you. Your friends don't care about you. The only person that's going to look out for you is yourself. And if you can't pick yourself up from that, then you're not going to have a good time. And it really takes that individual mindset of saying, like, I am responsible for myself and I am going to achieve the things only through me. Like, I have to put myself in situations where I'm going to step up and get out there and actually get what I want. No one's going to hold your hand. I mean, people will support you along the way. People will definitely put you down more than they pick you up. And as supportive as like people can be, still, you know, you're at the end of the day, you're all that you have. And so you just have to realize that, hey, like, if I don't kick it into gear, then I'm going to fall down the hill. So, I mean, you just got to put in yourself a situation where you kind of boost your ego a little bit. That's why I run marathons. And I used to not tell people that I'm running a marathon until like the day of, because I didn't want anyone cheering me on, just so I'd have that mentality of like, I am responsible for finishing this marathon on my own. I didn't train enough, or like, I didn't do this. Or you can say like, I did train enough. I knew I put in the hours, I knew I put in the effort, and I didn't have to tell anyone that I'm running this marathon. But when I'm there, it's just you in the road. Like, no one's going to pick up your feet and walk for you. You know, you're the one that's going to struggle through it all. And at the end of the line, you're the only one that's going to be there. So that's why I didn't tell anybody that I was running this marathon. And so that's the mentality that you have to be in. You know, it doesn't matter if you're running a business or like trying to lose weight or anything, fixing your diet. Like, sure, you can tell people and they'll provide encouragement. But at the end of the day, like, that only does so much. If you don't pick up, you know, your feet and actually go for it, then that's your fault. And that's just a harsh truth that a lot of people don't realize.
So no one's coming to save you.
Exactly. No one cares.
No one cares, and no one's going to come and save you. Not the government, not your mom or parents or whoever, except yourself.
Yeah, you gotta be hungry.
You can save yourself from the situation that you are in based on your decisions. And
right. Yeah, I mean, like, okay, so I'll switch it to the business side instead of marathons. No one really believed in what I was doing when I quit my job. My parents, so this is the first time this is public, and I don't think my parents knew, but quit my job, and it wasn't until like a month later that I actually told them. So I was actually going to co-working spaces a month, you know, in between my job and like telling my parents that I quit my job. So I told you, it's like, it's all on yourself. Like, my parents, I knew they would really hate it, because they're all traditionally like, you know, you need to go to school, get good grades, and like go get a good job and everything. It was a good job. It just wasn't the right job for me. And so I was in the co-working spaces, like trying to grind out, you know, all these things and like working with the partners and stuff and trying to make it work. And then after Thailand, like before Thailand, my parents were like, we hope you're going to do well. Like, it wasn't like, you're going to get it, we believe in you, blah, blah, blah. It was like, there's a slight like distrust there, you know? And so I was like, I still believed in myself.
They're like, okay, when it doesn't work, we're going to tell you, we told you so.
No, it never was like that. It was just like, oh, we hope we hope you know what you're doing. And like, I still want you to like find a job, and like, it's so not safe and blah, 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 blah. Then afterwards, they're all like, oh, we're proud of you, blah, blah, blah. And like, they'll give you the congratulations. But like, I mean, my parents are great. Like, my parents are the best. I feel like a lot of people go through that. It's like, no one's really going to hold your hand the whole way. Like, you got to believe in yourself. There's always going to be those like one or two shots that are trying to, you know, bring you down, and people will think you're crazy and like all these negative things. But if you just look at some success and think that you can get there and you believe in yourself, then yeah, you're getting there. So that's the game plan from day one. It was just like, I'm going to make this work. I don't really care what other people think. And of course, like, it hurts a lot, you know, for a good amount of time, a couple months. It was just like trying to struggle through, like, living at home and like my parents tell me every day, like, get a job. Like, how about you look at this? Like, hey, this person's hiring, and like suggesting that I go back to like corporate and stuff. And like, oh, yeah, like, we found, you know, a mutual friend, and like, he does this. And isn't that exciting? Like, don't you want to go do that with him? Oh, let's go and like get you to apply. Like, just give me a resume. Like, that's how far they wanted me to not do this. And, you know, it did come to a point where I was just like getting beat by that like every single day. And not until like merch, my first month, I made $50. And when people would ask me, like, we met like my friends at church, and they'd be like, so what do you do? And then I'd be like, make t-shirts on Amazon. And they'd be like so embarrassed, like making $50. And then the next month I made 300. And I was just like, all right, hell yeah, I'm rich. And I was just going to be like, all right, yeah, I'm making shirt. That's what I'm doing. But I would pitch it as like a side hustle. So if you go on my Facebook and like scroll all the way down to like where I first started merch, I'm like, this is my side hustle. Please buy my t-shirts, and like blah, 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 blah. Like, none of my friends bought t-shirts. And I was just like, this is so embarrassing. But I was still making constant sales though, because it was still rolling in money every month. And then the third month is when it hit big. So it went from like $50 to 300. And then one of my t-shirts caught, and it became the number 50th shirt on Amazon. And it was like a random t-shirt. And so that month I made 7K on my third month in merch. And that's when I was like, oh, we made it. We're rich. We can retire. Let's go travel the world. And at the time I was in Canada with my girlfriend at the time. And I was like, oh, hell yeah. Like, I've literally made money on the plane. That's freaking crazy. And like, she was with me through the whole time of like through Thailand, through like all the struggles and like app stuff and like all that. And then finally it was just like, I can breathe, you know? And so that was the point where it's like, this merch has now become my side hustle for real. I've been coasting on that ever since. And it's just been providing passive income for me while I travel. So it's like basically my flight money and like my travel money and all that. It's just all the plane money now. So I reached a point where it's like, I worked hard, you know, 30, 40 hours a week, really trying to make it work. And then all of a sudden the parachute opened. And then now, you know, I'm able to travel and do whatever I want. And now I can help people get to the point where I am. And I'm really passionate about merch because I went through all the struggles. I tried a whole bunch of business models, and like, I know like it wasn't for me. This one works for me. Like, I don't want you to go through that struggle and like the parachute not opening up 8 months in, you know, and you only have a 12-month runway. I'd rather it open up, you know, month three or like month two. So that's why it's like, I really, really care for the people that are in merch, and I try to teach people all these things. And like, that's why I show like people my lifestyle, because, you know, people say like, I can't do that. That's not for me. You must be special. It must be a lot of work, you know, like they come up with a billion excuses. But I, you know, I don't work actively on merch that much anymore because I have systems put in place so that the money just works for me. Like, it sounds pretty cliche, like make the money work for you, but it's actually like that. So yeah, I mean, like, you just got to get in the mindset of working and really, really making sure that it's the right business model and everything is put in place, and you put in the F, then the parachute will open up. So yeah, it's not that hard.
So where are you headed next? I mean, we have a trip, you know, we have trips in Asia.
Yeah. So last month I came from Hawaii. Usually how I do my trips is I like to go back home at least a couple days each month just to see my family, see my dogs, and like catch up with friends. So I don't like to stay in one particular place like over a month and a half, but I come back home just to, you know, have that home base kind of sense. And so I was in Hawaii for a month last month. This month I bought a one-way ticket to Mexico in Cancun, and I'm coming back for Thanksgiving. And then next month I still have that up in the air. It might be Jamaica. I haven't really planned. I promised people I'd come to like Colorado and see them. And then there's also Christmas, so I'll be home for that. Yeah, right. I might come to New York or...
Yeah, I mean, Vincent.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's kind of what's cool about being a digital nomad is, like, you have the flexibility to go wherever you want. you always have a home somewhere in the world. So that's also kind of how I travel. I go to places multiple times and make friends and establish a community and a tribe there instead of going and checking off a list of like, I've been to this country, that country, this country. If you go to my Instagram, then it's like, I've been to Canada, you know, 5 months of the year, and Mexico almost 3 months of the year now. And so I just go back, make new friends, meet the old friends, really get to learn the cities that I'm in. And what's coming up next is got Chiang Mai, going back to the Nomad Summit in January. Going to try out Bali in Indonesia for the first time. Everyone up Bali, and I just want to see what's going on over there. I got invited to South Africa. Got some friends that are from there, so going to try to make a trip over to the other side. Most of the trips I've done have been through Asia and North America. I've been to Paris and London before, but really didn't get to know the cities that well. And after that's going to be Ukraine for sure. Everyone's hyping up Ukraine from the Las Vegas trip, so we're making a point to go out.
Who's everyone?
Man, so like Johnny and like all the digital nomads, I mean, are just like, oh yeah, Ukraine's the best. And like even people that you've never met before, but they've been over to that side of the world, they're like, oh yeah, you're going to love it in Ukraine. The reason being is because it's $300 a month for cost of living. For a Big Mac, it costs $1. And for a private villa at a pool, it's $40 for bottle service and a security guard in a nice place. So yeah, you can really stretch your dollar out there. And that's the kind of travel I like. You know, I like to ball on a budget. That's my motto. So
ball on a budget.
Bougie on a budget is the alternative.
Ball on a budget. We should trademark that, you know? Yeah.
Put that on a t-shirt.
We should make it. We should make a t-shirt. No, actually, I think that should be a good idea.
Yeah, you saw it here first.
Wait, did anyone trademark it?
Ballers on a budget. I don't know. We can check right now.
You know what we can do is we should make a squad t-shirt that says ball on a budget.
Ballers on a budget.
Yeah, ballers on a budget. We wear it to wherever we go. I think that would be awesome. You know, I've been thinking about that because since 2019 is going to be crazy. You're going to have a lot of travel. Are you going to join us in Japan?
That's kind of a personal thing. Yeah, we talked about goals and stuff. And I told the guys that if I make $10,000 a month again, then I'll join in Japan. But that's on me. We'll see how it goes. So from January to July, like, My schedule is pretty clear, so we'll see how it goes.
Japan is going to be awesome. We don't even know how long we're going right now. Yeah, travel. How do you travel on a budget? Let's talk about that. How do you travel on a budget? What is your travel tip?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of ironic right now, but I'm staying in a resort. But this is probably the nicest place I've ever been in traveling. And usually how I do things is that the first week in a new country, I'll go to a hostel. That way I can make a lot of friends and go do those experiences and live like a tourist for a week and then really get to know like area with other people. Because if you're going on your own, it can be a little scary. The next week I'll get an Airbnb just because I need that private Wi-Fi. I need that personal space and all of that. And then if I want to splurge a little bit, then I'll go to a hotel and like get my room cleaned and all that. But that's a rare occasion. Usually I just stick with Airbnbs. Uber is huge. So taxis will rip you off and sometimes they won't run the meter. Sometimes they'll do like base price plus the meter. So you really don't know like if you're getting a good deal. But thankfully with Grab, Lyft, Uber, all of those services, you know you're getting a fair deal. SIM cards are pretty cheap. So you can spend about $20 on a SIM card. And it will last you a month with like 4 gigs of data. So you just download WhatsApp and that'll be your call and text. And then you just use your data to boost your phone. So you don't need to pay for the extra minutes or the extra texts or all of that. You just pay for the data plan. Get a maximalist carry-on bag. I mean, like you can go with...
You mean a minimalist, right?
No, a maximalist. So I like to squeeze... it's kind of an Asian thing, or at least like that's what we were raised to do. You got to squeeze every single space of your bag or box or whatever. Like if it's a 55 pound weight limit on a check-in, like my family would get the scale out and like measure every single box to meet like 54.9 or whatever, just to maximize on that. And so that kind of carried over to my travel now. So my carry-on bag is actually the biggest size you can possibly have for a carry-on bag. And that way it's like, if you bring a souvenir, then you can take it with you. And like, you have the reassurance that like you have all that stuff. Now you don't have to fill the bag, but at least you know that you have the space for it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. How much does it weigh?
Pretty light. They make backpacks just for these travelers. So it's like, it's not a bunch of pockets. It's just literally like an open face suitcase with straps and just the right amount of pockets, like a easy access laptop sleeve. So you can just pull it out when you're having to go through the customs line or the immigration line and stuff, or whatever, the place for your passport, the buckles on the sides to hold everything in place and all that. So it's probably like 2-3 pounds.
Oh yeah, you have nomadic one, right?
I've got the Tortuga set out. It's their latest model. It runs around $200.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I think it's Vincent with the nomadic. That one's really good. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, because I remember I bought my bag in Sonora. We were in Vegas. I had my bag in your room. And I remember we had the comparison right on the bags. Like, we were talking about the bells and whistles of, okay, does it have this? And all the laundry bag, the compressor bag, and all of these compartments, right?
Right.
What is one essential thing that you cannot leave home without, that you cannot leave your home country without?
Well, it'd definitely be my laptop.
Oh, well, this doesn't include your passport.
Yeah, well, I mean, since you work online, it's got to be
that's
laptop.
Too easy. Come on. Something that we probably don't.
Well, this is a new one. Okay. So when I went to Hawaii, I like to get something traditional from every place. So like, I have a traditional shirt from Mexico. I have, you know, maple syrup and all that jazz from Canada. I have like things from Thailand, the elephant pants and all that. And so the one thing I brought back from Hawaii was my biggest aha moment while traveling. So it's a sarong. And so what a sarong is like basically a little, it's a thin towel kind of, but it's made out of cloth. And what they do is they like wrap it around themselves. If you've seen Moana or like any kind of Polynesian or tropical movie, Lilo and Stitch or whatever, you'll see them in the movies and they wrap it around themselves and that's kind of like their skirt or whatever. So the guys wear it, the girls wear it, but it has so many uses. So if you're at the beach, you just lay down your sarong and you don't have to sit on the sand. If you're in the airplane and you're a little cold, you just have something to cover you. The sarong just comes in handy. If you don't have a towel, then like that thing's right there and it just soaks it up and it's so thin that it dries really quickly. If you need to carry a bunch of stuff, just like lay your sarong out, put all the things inside and then wrap it up like hobo style. Like, this thing is literally the universal and all of everything. Like, that's, no one needs a sarong.
So we're going to see you in a sarong quite soon though.
Heck yeah, man. My favorite Instagram caption of all time is "sarong never felt so right." And I think I'm just going to abuse that to death because I love that caption so much.
That should be a t-shirt.
Right?
And I think, yeah, you can have like a silhouette of you or a cartoon figure of you with the sarong on.
Oh, heck
and
yeah.
And it says under it, "sarong never felt so right."
See, now your listeners are going to come in and be like, ooh, that's a good idea. Let me make that shirt. Boom. You guys can credit us and make your millions and we'll see you traveling.
You just give us a royalty check for that.
Man, I don't even care about that, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's a joke.
But yeah, like, sarongs are definitely the place, it's the place to be. Like, there's so many uses for it. If you're on the airplane and people are coughing, you can just wrap your sarong around your nose for a second or so. Like, there's so many uses for sarong.
Wow. That's something new. I haven't heard that before.
But can't you see like yourself using one now?
No, that's not
my, really.
Because comfort is definitely a thing when you're traveling. You don't want to be wearing stuff that's bothersome. And I bought a pair of pants with joggers recently. They're really nice. And they double as sort of work, you know, sort of like work trousers. Not really work trousers. So say I wear...
Yeah, it's like the stretchy...
Yeah, it's like stretchy, but it looks like work.
Stretchy dress pants.
Yeah, it's like stretchy dress pants, but at the same time...
Yeah, I've got a pair too.
I don't need to wear a shirt with that because it's all black. It looks kind of weird.
Okay.
I can match it with a t-shirt and a blazer. So I can wear a blazer, a t-shirt, and I'll wear the joggers. And then some sneakers or shoes. I think I can even get away with shoes. So the great thing about that is so soft. When I get onto the plane, I have that on as well. And those will last me the long haul flights. So like 15-hour flights, you know, 16-hour flights. Mm-hmm. I would just wear that and I'll be really comfortable. The only problem is some of these pants, the stuff stick to it like crazy, like these and all of these things. That's the thing with clothes in general. Some of them are just not good. I'm still searching for the most versatile jacket that I can find that will last me when it's snowing, when it's raining, and it's light, doesn't take up a lot of space, it's not heavy, like it's not, it doesn't weigh a lot. You know, if you find one, let me know, because I don't want to pack too many things in my bag. I'm just looking for a solution.
Yeah. So those pants are awesome. There's a term for them now. They've come up recently in the market. It's like athletic, but still business wear. Lululemon has a set that's just made for that. So like they're stretchy. You can wear them in the gym, but also throw a blazer on. And if you want to be a baller on a budget, these are the ones that I have. No, I don't remember the name, but it's by Uniqlo. So Uniqlo has these pants as well that they're stretchy. They look really good with a blazer on. And they're just so comfortable. So I have probably 4 pairs of those. I have 2 of the same color just because I know like these are the most comfortable pants. They look great for anything. And any traveler that you know that has been through long-term travel, they have that unique set where it's like, if I'm going to go out on the town, this is what I'm going to wear. Those pants are in that arsenal. So people definitely need some of those stretchy pants.
Yeah, those are... I invested in a good pair. I mean, I don't mind sharing it. I got it on discount, you know. Asian, we love getting things at
heck
a discount.
Yeah, man.
It was 30% off Bloomingdale's. I think it was in Bloomingdale's. It was like 30% off. And then there was another $50 off or something like that. So it was like some Hugo. It was a Hugo Boss. It was a Hugo Boss jogger, like the pants.
Right on.
The dress, like the jogger / work pants, and they look amazing. They feel amazing. Original was like over $100, but then I got it for like $50. And I thought it was one of the greatest investments I've made. I guess even though like you could probably get a good, like you could get a normal pair of joggers for like $30, $20, $30. But I thought, you know, it,
those Uniqlo ones are like 17, dude.
Oh, I didn't know that. I mean, but the thing is, you know, since it doubles as work pants, $50 for work pants are So you just gotta like factor in the how versatile the thing is, if especially if you're traveling all the time.
Yeah, and, that's another big
clients
tip.
And all that.
Right. So. As in my wardrobe, basically everything I have is a neutral color. They call them capsule wardrobes. So it's either navy, gray, black, or some white. Yeah. That's a big
white
tip.
Silver, gray, blue,
beige,
red. I don't know if it's red, but
tan. But if you look at all the clothes that I bring, it's basically like all dark colors. So just keeps it all like flexible with whatever I want to choose to wear.
Kind of like Mark Zuckerberg sort of wardrobe.
Yeah.
Put something on. Yeah. I there was a time where I
like a sarong.
Yeah, like a sarong. I at one point I wanted to really find some stuff that were I wanted to match clothes. Right. I was really caught up into like, oh, I want to go out and be presentable and stuff. And now I have to make a huge decision. You know, traveling. I cannot bring everything. I cannot bring the whole wardrobe. And that's also the realization that you have that you can't take everything. You can't take anything with you.
Right.
I mean, you can't take as much as you like, right?
Right.
And it also reminds you of us as humans, like we can't take much with us.
Mm-hmm.
If we can't take anything with us, does it really matter? Like, does that really matter? You know, all these possessions. So
right.
Then shift the focus from
that's a big point.
Acquiring material things to acquiring memorable experiences. I think that is lasts much longer, and it's much more. You know, it gives you good memories and good stories. And I think good stories is always a great something great. Nobody's gonna remember like,
yeah, exactly.
What freaking like gadget you have? Like they remember. Oh, because you shared that story with them where You know, you're trekking down the mountain, you almost died. You were stuck on the boat in the Philippines, and there was lightning, and then
right,
and like that was one of your stories, right? You're stuck on the island or something like that. And people remember these stories, right? And it sort of inspires them, like, wow, you know what? They feel the same fears, and they're also human, right? They're not like some superhuman person that only this can happen to. Like, all of these sort of experiences are only reserved for a select few, and no one else is allowed to do that. But it sort of humanizes us, like sharing these stories humanizes us. So I think that,
you're coming to a point where I tell a lot of people this, is that when you're doing long-term travel or backpacking or just travel in general, you are actually portraying your most vulnerable and rawest form of self. So a lot of the girls, they don't have their makeup, like everything that they're bringing. They don't have their fancy clothes. They don't have, you know, everything that makes them look the way they want it to be. It's just raw. Like, if something happens, if like rain starts to pour on you, then all that makeup's washed off, blah, 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 and all that. And for guys, it's like...
And then you got a meeting in like 20...
Yeah. And like, if you have a meeting or something, it's like you only have the things that you brought. And so your personality, your life just basically reflects on who you are at that moment while you're traveling in a foreign country. And so when you meet somebody, you're giving your truest form of self. Nothing's fake. You don't show them your fancy car. You don't show them your nice house. All you have is what you have, like your bank account, your belongings that you just brought in your backpack, and your personality. I'm not saying like show off your bank account, but it's just like if you're going on a date, like you can pay for the date. Or you're not showing like your fancy car or anything. It's just like, these are my true intentions. These are my true form of self. And like, you see me as I actually am, like as I woke out of bed and like just picked out the 4 or 5 shirts that I own right now. And this is me. And they're the same way. It's like, they just have their bare essentials. Like that's the closest, like most personal things that they have that they own, and they chose that to be in their backpack. And so you connect with people better because everyone's on the same playing field. Does that make sense?
This is quite beautiful. I think
you're beautiful.
I didn't see it this way. You know, like this is something that's going on as a snippet. Like we're gonna have to like.
You're gonna grab that?
Yeah, I'm gonna grab
that. Yeah, man, I got a lot of things to share.
Do share. No, this is a wisdom that I think being in the state, I mean, it's sometimes uncomfortable, right? You know, you feel vulnerable, you feel like, oh man, I should have put on something better, but then, you know, this is all I have with me. And that's that.
Right.
Like, we have to come to terms with who we are, you know.
This is me.
This is me. And I have nothing else to.
And people don't like you for that.
Go ahead. So be it, right? You know.
Yeah, it's like, this is all that I have, and like the cologne that I brought is the only smell that I'm gonna be for this trip, and like this is basically all my favorite things. And so that's what you're presenting to the world. And like when two people meet like that, it's like, hey, like this is who I am in my most vulnerable self. And then they're like, yeah, this is who I am. Like we're both kind of like just bumbling around here. And this is what's important to me. And if they brought like the fancy everything and the, you know, like Gucci slides and like blah, 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 it shows like that's what's important to you. And so that's what you're portraying. But if you're like, you're just there to have a good time and meet good people and like show off your personality, then like that's way better than meeting somebody in a club at your hometown and, you know, putting on all the fancy blah, 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 blah. And so those are the people that you really want to connect with.
Sometimes you could bring one or two of those items, but you can't really bring them all, right? You know, there's only that much space, right? You have to be so picky. It's like, you know, there's this really nice blazer that I really like. This is a true story. I really like this blazer, but I don't really get a chance to wear it. I only get to wear it maybe once a year, right? Because it doesn't match any other occasion that I would wear it at. I can't go and see a client with it. This is something you would wear if you go to like a fancy party or something like that. So there's no point in, you would not bring that with you. Of course, you'd love to have infinite, you know, space, but
that's all. Like, we realize that if we can't bring it up the mountain, you know, you cannot bring the backpack up the mountain or something. I watched the video, it was by Nas or something, and it's something called a mountain test. If you can't bring all your possessions up with you to the mountains, then you have too much. You bring too many things.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
What is one of the most spontaneous thing that has ever happened to you while you're on a trip? I mean, it doesn't have to be most spontaneous. What is something that's spontaneous and it kind of put you out of the comfort zone, and at the end of the day, you overcame that discomfort and it made you a better person?
There's a lot of things that I'm thinking about. Like, which one do I want to say? Some of them aren't really G-rated, so... Okay.
Hey, yeah, that's
I've got one. So this was my first time in Thailand and we got done with the summit. We were working really hard. Like, that motivation was really getting put to use. And so we were in Pun Space in Chiang Mai working until like 3 a.m. And I had a marathon scheduled after I got back. Half marathon, actually. And I had my running gear and like all my stuff. And that's all I brought because I still wanted to train while I was in Thailand. So me and my friend ended our work session at 3 a.m. And then we split ways. And I put into Google Maps, like, okay, like, get me the fastest way possible to my hotel or Airbnb. And so Google brought me through all the side streets. And Thailand's a generally safe place. And I never had any fear or anything going into Thailand. I've been throughout Asia and I'm not really worried about anything. And I looked Thai, so I knew like no one was. When I was walking through those alleys, they weren't really lit that well. It was pretty dark. There's like cockroaches all around and like rats going around. That's fine and everything. But I started to hear dogs barking. And I was like, okay, I don't know what's going on, but some commotion's happening over there. Then the barking started closer. And so I was like, all right, well, you know, I'm training for this marathon. So let me just start jogging a little bit and I'll just jog home, get there faster.
Might have to outrun a few dogs if you have to, right?
Yeah. And so I was just like preparing myself. And so I started, you know, just jogging, and then the barking got a little louder. And then I turned a corner because Google told me to. And this dog, it was probably a good like 100 pounds, was right there and started barking at me. So of course I sidestep, fight or flight, and I ran, man. So I just started running and I knew that was a bad idea because the dog started chasing me. And I was like, oh God. So I'm like running. I was like thinking through my mind, like, okay, what's going to happen? Like, this dog's going to catch me. I'm going to get bit, going to have to go to the hospital. And like, this is a disaster. So I trip and fall on a speed bump. And at that point, I'm lying on my back and I'm like, I am dead. This dog's gonna get me. So dog stares me down, starts barking, and then walks away. I was like, oh, thank God. But didn't bite me. But then I felt like all this pain throughout my hand and like everything was just hurting. And my foot was just really feeling it. And so I get up and all that adrenaline's rushing through. This guy staring at me because I was screaming at this dog. I was like, hey, get away. And guy came out of his house and he starts looking at me. And I'm like, I'm okay. Start like walking a little bit. And I'm like, okay, I'm definitely not walking right. I start limping over to the nearest streetlight. And I'm like, okay, I definitely feel something in my foot because I step down and then all of a sudden it's just like wet. So I take off my shoe, take off my sock, and like my foot's all bloody. My toenail basically kind of popped out and I got a huge cut on my toe. And so I was like, all right, well, it's hospital time. So I hobble my way over to a tuk-tuk and the dude's like, I said, hey, I need to go to the hospital. And he was like, all right, so it's going to be, I forgot how much baht. I think it was like 500 or something. And I was used to paying like 15 baht. So I I thought to myself, I was like, do I want to negotiate this price? Should I pay $5 or 50 cents? You know? And at that point, I was like, you know what, whatever. I'm going to choose my health. So I paid the like 500% increase on the fare. And he took me to the hospital, but not to the door, and made me hobble with my shoe over to the emergency room. And I'm like, hey, I got bit by a dog. They only speak Thai. And I'm like, ah, I'm screwed. And they're like, okay, so like fill out this and hand me a form. And I don't know, like sign my life away. I'm just thinking like, this is going to be so expensive. Like, I am so screwed. I'm going to get stitches. Hope I didn't break anything. And they take me into the room and start, like, analyzing everything and ask me if I got bit by the dog. No, I didn't. And they start, like, stitching me up. And I'm, like, screaming in the hospital because it hurts so much. I was like, oh, yeah, my marathon's in 2 weeks. Here we go. So I was taking like snap stories of everything and people were like freaking out because it's daytime during the States because it's already 4 a.m., which is like 4 p.m. back home. So they stitched me up, put a little bandage on me and send me over to the pharmacy. And so I give them a form and everything and they give me a goodie bag full of drugs and like stitches or like treatments and everything. They're like, okay, here's the bill. And it was $15. I was like, this would easily be like a grand in the States. So I was amazed. I was like, wow, that's crazy. They hooked me up with everything and like made sure I was okay. And that's when I realized like medical tourism is a huge, huge thing. Cause people like pay so much to get fixed in the States, but like it was a top-notch service over there and they paid $15. That was my awesome spontaneous moment in Thailand.
All right. Awesome. So if people want to follow you, get in touch with you and learn more about your business, where can they find you?
Yeah. So I am on Instagram. I am at rj.mac, like Big Mac. And then I have a Merch by Amazon Lifestyle page on Facebook. So it's Merch by Amazon Lifestyle. It's also connected with DFW Merch by Amazon on Meetup. I think that's the title. And yeah, if you just ask Gilbert too, he'll just send you my contact info.
Oh, I have that in the show notes.
Perfect.
Awesome stuff, RJ. There you have it, RJ Mac talking about lifestyle, Amazon merch, and how to live life on your own terms. Thank you for joining us on the show, and we'll see you on the next one. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. You can find more episodes every Tuesday. If you haven't done so, please subscribe for more updates as they come. Until next time.